Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to begin by doing a classroom on the air, more in-depth, about functional foods, how they function in the body to promote health, allow you to live a longer life, and really stimulate the immune system so you're less susceptible than if you were on a junk food diet, obese, with diabetes, heart disease, smoke, with emphysema. All of us have seen the consequences of that either in our own lives or the lives of our friends and family. No need for that. It is not difficult. Being healthy is easy. Giving yourself rationalizations for doing things that are going to cause sickness, that's more complicated. I'm looking at people every day who I have on protocols who their doctor said, it's over. We did everything we could. There's nothing more can be done. Then I get the call. You'd be amazed to see how some of these people are today. In fact, I'm going to get the permission today, or Luann will, of one of the people that attended our anti-aging conference in April who made major changes. And she took a picture then and a picture today. You would not know it's the same person. She looks 20, 30 years younger. Just since April, doing a healthy plant-based diet, exercising, and taking proper supplementation. Is she as susceptible as anyone else who might have been in her previous unhealthy condition to disease? No, she is not. Now, it's not done overnight, but it's cumulative. So the more good things you do, the more you accumulate that on the positive side. Now, we're all going to be faced with viruses, bacteria, and parasites, and other creatures, large and small, and antigens that can adversely affect our health. It doesn't mean we all get sick. I can recall when a group of the staff at the Tri-State Healing Center asked for clarification. They were wearing masks and full gowns and gloves to treat people with AIDS, and I was just going in my normal, casual clothes, sitting, holding hands with the people. Because when you hold someone's hands and you look them in the eyes and they're sitting there, you have to have the empathy to know that they're terrified. They're afraid. HIV infected, that equals death, whether it's in 12 to 14 months. And they think they're going to die because everyone else there around says, oh yeah, AIDS is a death sentence. So when you are talking with them and you don't have a mask on and you're holding their hands, you're saying, not on my watch, you're not going to die. And then you give them confidence. Otherwise, think of how they would feel if everyone feels, oh my God, this person's breathing is going to spread the HIV virus. Yeah, that was the lie Anthony Fauci put out. So I told the staff, none of you are going to get AIDS if you take off your gloves and your masks. And they did. And then everybody, it was just like a party. In fact, oh, you should have seen it. It was so wonderful, and I didn't film it out of respect for the people who volunteered their time, but there'd be funny shows in there with Dick Gregory. Dick was a longtime friend of mine, decades, close personal friend. He would do impromptu comedy routines. Isaac Hayes would come down. Now, he didn't sing, but they put on one of the nurses who was a fan would put on his music, and everybody was up and moving, and he would bring juices. Now, mind you, we had a juice machine in there. We were making juices all day long, but it was his contribution. And all Andy Kaufman, who was a close friend of mine. I don't talk about the famous people. I know are friends, but he was a very close friend. And he would come in and do his shtick. I mean, a lot of people. I'm talking about not just a few, but dozens of famous people. And it was like party time. And people would look forward to coming there. In fact, we had a de-stress room that I won't mention his name, but a very famous American artist went in there. He said, what do you want? And I said, I'd love a tropical room where when you walk in here, everything just oozes of being in the tropics. Well, 3 weeks later, he said, take a look. What do you think? And oh my God, it just blew me away. He painted the ceiling, the walls, everything, and then brought in tropical plants, and we had bamboo mat on the floor for the whole floor. It was bamboo. and a misting thing in the air and a water wall where water was trickling down and these comfortable reclining chairs. And there were, I think, 14 reclining chairs, 7 and 7. It was packed all day and clear up till midnight where people go in there and just de-stress. Now, these were the patients, and it just made them feel different. Why can't we do that in every medical setting? Why can't we create an environment where people don't feel as if they're diseases, broken down parts that the mechanic, the garage, is there to fix and charge some outrageous amount of money for? In any case, the whole process begins by changing the mindset of what we're going to tolerate and what we're going to be not tolerating. So you say no to A and yes to B. Now, hopefully in the next week or two, I will ask if this person wants to go public. If they don't, that's fine. I won't talk about it. But if they do, this is a well-known person, highly respected, who I've managed to get off five very serious drugs. I'm not talking about medicines. OxyContin is just one and not the worst of them. First time in this person's adult life, they're drug-free for over a month and just a completely different personality and physicality. So if that person was able to do it, why not others? We've got to start looking at that we are we. We've got to get out of the idea that I'm not connected. Yes, you are connected. When you turn on this radio program, you're connected. We have to share. We have to get beyond all this childish and mature identity politics and look at the real world and how loving and caring and nurturing and cooperative people have been, are. You don't look at those examples throughout history of the worst that human beings can be. You have to look at what is the best people can be, because that's the level that we were meant to live on. And so our journey begins generally very simply, making the right choices and consistently so. So something is within your power is the food you choose. Now, yesterday I talked about superfoods that can prevent cancer from proliferating and help your prostate and colon cancer, like blueberries. But today I'm going to go into some of the vegetables. And the superstar vegetable at the top of the list is broccoli. It is, without question, the highest concentration of two phytochemicals. And one is isothiocyanate, C-Y-A-N-A-T-E, isothiocyanate. And it also has a diindolymethane. Now, these are powerful immune modulators. Broccoli strengthens the immune system, which means it helps to fight against cancer, particularly breast cancer and prostate cancer, and it boosts the body's protection against bacterial and viral infections. Broccoli contains other anti-cancer agents as well, such as what is called a glucuronin, G-L-U-C-O-R-A-P-H-A-N-I-N. Now, due to these observed properties, a substantial amount of research, we're talking about thousands of studies in PubMed, have shown broccoli's anti-mutagenic qualities, how it can protect your DNA, protect your cells. It's rich in vitamins A, B5, B6, B9, which is folate, vitamin C and K, very high in dietary fiber, and it also provides moderate amounts of calcium, iron, phosphorus, and potassium. And as with other leafy green vegetables, broccoli contains lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N, and zeaxanthin, Z-E-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N, which fosters eye health. And because it has more calcium than almost even dairy products by dry weight, broccoli can protect your bones and increase bone mass. Now, I suggest that every day, for people who have cancer or are precancerous, you have 1 pint of broccoli sprouts in your salad. I don't recommend juicing the broccoli sprouts because it would take a gallon or a bushel basket. A whole bushel basket of broccoli sprouts would give you about 3 ounces of juice. Much better to get a powder of broccoli and use that because it's more concentrated. Another great vegetable, inexpensive, easy to find, locally grown, are carrots. Carrots are a cheap provider of what we call the carotenoids, C-A-R-O-T-E-N-O-I-D-S, carotenoids. That's a family of antioxidants proven to block DNA and cellular member damage caused by free radicals. In fact, that's one of the reasons that people who are in the running and walking club, I just met one at a farmer's market who came over, and I remembered his face, and we had like 800 members of the club, so I didn't remember all their names. But I sure never forget a face. And he said, Gary, he said, 1995, I did a marathon. I did five marathons with the club. And he said, I have a couple questions, but I see that you're, you know, I don't want to bother you while you're shopping here, because I'm sure other people try to take advantage and ask you questions when you're in this environment. But maybe you can address this on the air. From 1995 to 2001, I lived in New York, trained with a group, and the last summer, you had your annual running and walking club picnic in Central Park, down on that hill going into the lake behind the fountain at 72nd Street. He said, I'd never been to one of the picnics. My goodness, there must have been 600-700 people. Everything was spread out on blankets, and everybody brought all this vegan stuff, and everybody shared. It was just wonderful. People were playing guitars, and you were... I looked, and you were with Franco Pantone, and the two of you were sitting down by the lake, and I was just curious. So when you started back up the hill, I asked you a question. I said, you're out there looking over the lake. What are you seeing? And you said something strange. He said, you said, I'm appreciating that the people who are walking out there holding hands, the people you see in that boat rowing, all these wonderful people around you, you'll never see this again. Every single thing in life you only experience once. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to re-experience things, but it will not be the same. Nothing is ever quite the same. And the danger in life is chasing yesterday's energy connections. I had no idea what you're talking about. Could you address that? The answer is yes. I will address that. I sent off your question to Elizabeth, so we'll get to that in the near future. Yeah, that's just an aside, because I had all the runners making a combination of garlic, ginger, and carrot and cucumber juice that they would drink after a workout, spiked with vitamin C. Why? Because the antioxidants that you need to trap the free radicals from the oxidative stress that you create by exercising, remember, it's a double-edged sword. As long as you compensate before and after a run, then the free radicals that your body creates from the oxidative stress, that deep breathing, are trapped and neutralized. Therefore, you get the benefit of the workout. You lose the body fat. You lower your pulse rate, which you want. The lower your pulse, the longer your heart's going to live. It's that simple. So people don't think about that. That if your heart rate is 75 and it could be 55, then you've just added probably 20 years onto your lifespan of your heart. Same with your muscles, same with your brain. So once you understand we have a biological clock, and it's controlled by the telomerase, an enzyme that functions on the telomeres, which are the end caps of on the chromosomes to keep them from, in effect, your chromosome from shredding. Just imagine if you took the caps off of your shoelaces, they would fray. The cell is not a whole lot different. In any case, by taking the juice, you're flooding the body with vitamin C, which is trapping free radicals like nothing else can, but also all those carotenoids and all those antioxidants. They're protecting your DNA and destroying free radicals. Now, we know that lycopene and alpha-carotene, which are rich sources coming from carrots, And they are specific to your colon, your prostate, and your lung and your stomach cancers. The lesser-known black and purple carrots have very high levels of antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N. These are powerful anti-cancer biochemicals that have been found to slow cancer cell proliferation by as much as 80%. And I had heard about the Gerson therapy down in Mexico, so I went down. I went down unannounced, and I got there, and I just said, I'm looking for Charlotte Gerson Strauss, and she came over. And once she met me, of course she knew who I was, because we had spoken, but not about me coming. And I said, I would like to know, do I have permission to interview patients here? There are about 50 patients, without any interference. She said, yes. And so I went around for 2 days, and I spoke. And interesting, there were a lot of nurses who were cancer patients. And I watched the routine, and they were drinking 16 glasses, large glasses, of carrot juice spiked with potassium per day. They had a very minimal, Spartan diet. I would not have given that diet. And it was the potassium, really, that was the key, based upon Max Gerson, her father, who was the first to actually cure terminal cancer patients, 50 of them, and took those cancer patients and their records to Congress. And Congressman Pepper from Florida held the hearings and actually acknowledged this, that this was phenomenal science, great health. And, of course, Max Gerson was attacked by the AMA after that congressional hearings, showing he could reverse terminal cancer. His daughter carried on his work. But unfortunately, in my opinion, and I told her this, your father, if he was still alive, was a great innovator. He would have gone far beyond. You've kind of immortalized his therapy and froze it in time. Why not use hyperbaric oxygen therapy here? Why not use ozonated colonics? Why not use ozone autohemotherapy, taking out some blood, ozonating it, putting it back in, because it kills cancer, oxygenates the blood. And I went through all these other nutrients beside potassium, because his philosophy was that there's an imbalance between sodium, too much sodium, too little potassium, and that spreads cancer. So anyhow, there was not enough variety in the diet, there was not enough variety in the juices, and so I thought, as successful as they were, and there was success, because I went back and filmed them, that there would have been a lot more successful. But I'm just sharing this with you because the juicing in healing protocols is at the top of the list. The more you juice, the healthier you're going to be. The more you detoxify, the more power you're giving your immune system to respond. So we also know that there's long-held beliefs that carrots improve vision, which is true because of the retinoids that benefit ocular health. Carrots also have been shown to boost brain function and provide cardiovascular benefit, such as decreasing cholesterol. Diabetics should keep carrots in their diet because they are a good source of vitamin A, which lowers blood sugar and aids in the development of insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. 1 cup of raw carrots can provide nearly 700% of the recommended dietary allowance of vitamin A and about 220% of vitamin K, which is critical for bone health. But again, if you're diabetic or hypoglycemic, I don't recommend straight carrot. I believe it has to be cut, and therefore cut it in with 50% being carrot, but then 25% being cucumber or celery. And the remainder, you can have other vegetables, green apple, but also throw in some garlic and ginger. Why garlic? Because garlic contains phytonutrients similar to those found in onions, which also possesses selenium. And selenium is a superstar. It offers protection against coronavirus and other viruses, but also various cancers and the deterioration of the body caused by free radicals. So researchers studied the ability of garlic to guard against heart disease and arterial calcification, which is hardening the arteries, arterial sclerosis. and to reduce cholesterol and blood pressure. And because it's a source of the flavonoid quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin, or as some say quercetin, both are correct, garlic contains antibiotic properties that empower it to fight colds and stomach viruses and yeast infections. Another little aside, this goes back to the first year I was in New York, and I felt myself getting run down. And so what I did was, and mind you, I didn't have a lot of knowledge on this, but I decided to take a lot of garlic and onion. So I'm just juicing away and juicing and juicing. And I look and I have this huge glass of just garlic and onion. And I thought, what could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with this? So I drank it all down. Boom. And then, my God, I just fell back on the little bed in this room and just, I was out. Interesting, because the next morning I woke up and the sheets were just soaked and I felt great. I'm sure my breath didn't smell well, but I felt terrific. And that was my one and only time that I felt something coming on that I really had to intercede. I would do it differently and do differently today. But just happy to know that in my entire adult life, I've never been sick. Not once. Not a single day. So not that anyone should do that. I'm not recommending anyone do garlic and onion like that. But a small amount of garlic, yes. Yeah, throw a couple cloves of garlic into a juice and throw in maybe a 2-ounce piece of ginger. And by the way, ginger is used throughout the world to cure stomach upsets and reduce gastrointestinal gases and relieve nausea caused by pregnancy and sickness and seasickness, flying sickness. Even drugs used in chemotherapy sometimes give you that woozy, out-of-balance feeling. Ginger is great for that. Now, ginger is composed largely of fragrant essential oils that give it a distinctive aromatic flavor. One of these oils is called gingerol, G-I-N-G-E-R-O-L. And it's like a natural sedative for calming the gastrointestinal tract. And this oil also provides some protection against pathogenic bacteria that upset the stomach. Ginger is really rich in antibiotic properties that combat the GI infections which cause diarrhea and dehydration. And in folk medicine, it's long been honored. And while some scientists have dismissed folk medicine, go to the Library of Medicine and Google ginger medicinal values. And suddenly you just see thousands of studies. So one of the things you can do if you want to ward off colds and the flu and sinus infections and congestion and coughs, just take a look at, also it lowers your cholesterol, by the way, and it helps treat diabetes. But take some garlic and take some ginger, not a lot of garlic, maybe a teaspoon, and a teaspoon of ginger. Put them in a cup of green tea, and then add in a teaspoon of Manuka honey and a half a teaspoon of bee propolis. Put in some vitamin C, maybe 1,000 milligrams, and quercetin, 1,000 milligrams. Stir it around, and then swish it in the back of the throat and drink it slowly, and it can kill an awful lot of pathogens that are in your throat and stomach. It's really good. I'm looking at the clock. Well, we've gone 25 minutes, so we're going to take a break. Tomorrow, I'm going to go into goji berries, green tea, legumes, that's a whole family, and leafy vegetables, that's a whole family, in our classroom on the air. Just giving you more depth of what you can do. Simple things, non-complicated, to help you. Before we go, however, we're going to have, let's see if we have Richard Gale on the line. If not, he'll call in a moment, because we're going to address two issues. The vaccination of the COVID vaccine for children and young people, is there science to justify it and support it? Also, the booster shot that's being advocated and pushed very, very strongly. But also today, we're going to throw some other things in your direction to give you some insights. For example, we're going to challenge the idea that the FDA is a scientifically rigorous organization that really works on behalf of the public. That's not true. We can prove it, and we will, when we hear from Iverson. And then also we're going to take a look at what Dr. Paul Marek, M-A-R-I-K, by the way, this guy holds 4 separate specialties in medicine. He's a heavyweight. And he's going to give us his thoughts on the war on COVID. Then you can make up your mind. If any of it makes sense, fine. If it doesn't, dismiss it. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Clearly, you know, over the last 18 months, it's evolved. So, you know, when the protocol started, you know, we first, you know, identified corticosteroids as important and vitamin C and D. And probably in about October, we recognized that there was emerging data on ivermectin. You know, it wasn't there at the beginning, but there was emerging body of evidence, and the evidence has grown. So the amount of misinformation, disinformation, bias is truly astonishing. Astonishing. It's nothing more than lies. So, I mean, you just have to look at the literature. There are 60 clinical trials that have looked at ivermectin, of which 30 are randomized controlled trials. There's probably more data on ivermectin than any other therapeutic intervention for COVID. Mm-hmm. And what the randomized trials show almost universally is decreased time to viral shedding, decreased hospitalization, decreased time to improvement, and decreased mortality. Mm-hmm. That's what the data shows. Now, obviously, there are enormous forces at play that do not like this data or misrepresenting this data and are lying. But that's what the data shows. So, you know, we can even look at the meta-analysis done by Andrew Hill. Andrew Hill was originally
with the WHO, right?
Recruited by the WHO, and he worked for the WHO, and he did a meta-analysis for the WHO. And his conclusion was that it was an effective treatment. There was a 1 in 7,000 chance that he was wrong. The WHO then, we know this, decided to change the conclusion of his paper. The WHO rewrote the conclusion of his paper to state there's no evidence. And we know this. So there were ghost writers who changed his paper. He then recorrected the paper. So, you know, the evidence is overwhelming. Now, the current lie perpetuated by the FDA is that this is a dangerous drug made for animals only.
Right.
So let me tell you the truth. 3.7 billion human beings have been treated with ivermectin for parasitic diseases.
Right.
It has almost changed the face of river blindness and filaria in Africa. What do we know in terms of safety? It is one of the safest medications ever made. It is safer than aspirin. More people have died from aspirin than from ivermectin.
The safety profile is very, very good for ivermectin, is what you're saying.
It's robust. It's one of the safest medications ever prescribed. And you know what? You can go to the WHO's website. So they have a website called Pharmacovigilance, where they track the side effects and deaths of medications for the last 25 years. If you go there and you look at ivermectin, it will list 16 deaths and 4,000 adverse events. And we think most of those deaths were due to the parasite. If you, on the same website, you look at the adverse events due to the SARS-CoV-2 vaccine, which is 6 months, they list over 9,000
right.
deaths and 1.7 million serious adverse events.
Wow.
And this excludes the 12,000 deaths in the U.S. There's so-called 16 deaths of ivermectin over 25 years. Mm-hmm. And there are now over 20,000 deaths in a few months with the SARS-CoV-2 vaccine. Mm-hmm. They're saying that the vaccine is safe, and yet ivermectin is toxic drug which kills people.
Okay, I have a small video clip that I want to play, and you can comment on it. It has some of the things that you've mentioned, but it's more for our viewers as well.
The WHO's chief scientist, Dr. Soumya Swaminathan, had put out a statement against the use of ivermectin to treat COVID-19. In May 2021, Dr. Swaminathan had tweeted, I quote, "The WHO recommends against the use of ivermectin for COVID-19 except within clinical trials," quote. The FDA similarly had recently tweeted conflating ivermectin for animals with that for humans and put out a tweet, "You are not a horse, you are not a cow. Seriously, y'all, stop it. Why you should not use ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID-19." Recently, Dr. Vivek Murthy, who is the Surgeon General of the United States, went on CNN to say that ivermectin is not a drug that should be used either to prevent or treat COVID-19.
And let me just say very clearly that ivermectin is not a recommended treatment for COVID-19. It is not a recommended drug to prevent COVID-19. The best protection we have against COVID-19 is the vaccine. And if you get COVID-19, we actually do have treatments that work, from steroids to monoclonal antibodies and other treatments. But ivermectin is not one of them.
Apollo Hospitals is a private hospital chain in India, headquartered in Chennai, Tamil Nadu. People have looked to Apollo for treatment guidance during the pandemic. In May 2021, they put out this statement.
So if we go by the scientific evidence and evidence-based medicine, there is no randomized controlled trial which has shown that the ivermectin works. In fact, the company who manufactures ivermectin, that is the MSD, itself have claimed that ivermectin is not to be used for COVID-19 infection. Recently, the WHO came out with a statement saying that ivermectin has not been proven therapy for COVID-19 infection. Yes, even in some of the state guidelines, the ivermectin, doxycycline, azithromycin are being prescribed for mild to moderate patients. But if you ask me scientifically, there is no evidence that the ivermectin works. So I would suggest that taking these medicines are of no use. The only use of ivermectin is basically if the patient is going to be on steroids, that time to prevent strongyloids hyperinfection, which is a parasitic infection, to prevent them, a single or two doses of ivermectin.
So here's where we're at. We have thousands of physicians and scientists who are using ivermectin, have been from the very beginning with hydroxychloroquine, both prophylactically, and now we have presented the actual number of studies, clinical studies, peer review studies. They're in the hundreds just for ivermectin and even more for hydroxychloroquine, and these are being used in combination along with vitamin D and vitamin C and selenium. All of that comes from the Library of Medicine. So those are not political statements, they're scientific statements. On the other hand, the Surgeon General, a political appointee, who has not given a single piece of advice of what to do to get yourself healthy or to stay healthy, not once has he done that, shows you how absolutely corrupt the system is. Here's what you weren't told. This is it from the Uttar Pradesh section of India, and quote, "They announced the state is COVID-free, proving the effectiveness of deworming drug ivermectin." Quote, and this is from Jim Hoft, and it says the following. Ivermectin is typically used to treat parasitic worms in animals and people. And then it's using the New York Times, quote, "Don't use it." All right. But now there's evidence that the 23 districts in Pradesh, India, have now become free of COVID-19. In a report dated August 31st, the recovery rate has increased to 98.6%. Let me repeat. Recovery rate, 98.6%, proving the effectiveness of ivermectin as part of the Pradesh COVID control model. This state, by the way, has an estimated population of 241 million people in 2021 and has the highest population in India. It is almost two-thirds the United States population and is now COVID-free. So what could the United States be doing wrong? And that's when then you just heard from the doctor telling you that he's used it, other people are using it with tremendous success. And yet, back in April, before they started using it, the caseload in that particular state was 310,783 in 1 month, but now it's been reduced by 99%. So we can look at the statistics before and after and the deaths before and after and say, my goodness, the evidence is overwhelming. And this is not just in that one state, the largest, most populated state in India. It's all throughout the world. I can show you cases in the bottom state in Mexico. There was high COVID. Now it's almost completely gone in deaths. So the word is out. So there's a lot of politics protecting a lot of money by waiting and get a vaccine that was never tested to prevent you contracting or spreading, being hospitalized or dying from COVID. That's a fact. You can read the British Medical Journal. So we posted this article so you can look at the graphs yourself and look at all the science. So they're going after everyone who suggests otherwise. Then, so, quote, the data is overwhelming. There's no medication that has been proven to be more effective than ivermectin for the treatment of SARS can save 60,000 lives per week, Dr. Paul Merrick, the gentleman you just heard. But here's something interesting. New York-based author Michael Capuzzo recently wrote a comprehensive article entitled The Drug That Cracked COVID. It is the story of Capuzzo's mother's road to recovery, and it says it all. She was on death's door, and the hospitals refused to treat her with ivermectin. Capuzzo's family, desperate to save the 80-year-old mother, took the fight to the courts and won, but the hospital still refused to comply with the court order. However, in her final hours, the family finally managed to get the mother treated with ivermectin, which allowed her to make a miraculous full recovery. And who does Capuzzo cite? Dr. Paul Merrick, as well as other doctors. So, and doctors from South Africa, from Italy, Mexico, and Cuba were also mentioned. And by the way, Merrick is a legendary professor, and he is the second most published critical care doctor in the history of medicine, with more than 500 peer-reviewed papers and books and 43,000 scholarly citations of his work and the research, H rating higher than many Nobel Prize winners. So you're talking about a real medical scientific heavyweight. And he says ivermectin works, the science supports it, clinical experience supports it. So that puts it all in perspective. What you ultimately choose to do with that is up to you, but at least I want you to know that. Now let's go over to Richard Gale, who is standing by. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, Gary, Richard? I'm sorry.
Let's go through three areas. Now they're trying to push to vaccinate children. You've studied all of the scientific literature that's available on whether or not children and teenagers and young people with no comorbidities are at risk of dying of COVID. You've also studied how many have died from the vaccines or end up with serious side effects in the vaccines. What does your outcome research show you?
Well, I mean, just to be clear, that the vaccines are not approved yet for children, and the studies that are still being done, that data is not available. Okay, so right now we can only really speak about kids from 12 to 15 years and older. Okay, so just that that's clear. But there, we already saw that Fauci is already recommending that all children from 2 years up will eventually have to be vaccinated. And we have to really, I think, ask the fundamental question of why that is. And I think the argument you're going to see being posed, although it hasn't been stated yet, and it's very dubious, is that they're going to be saying that it's going to be necessary for the benefit of adults. I believe that's going to be the argument you're going to see. So ethically, it's very dubious. But right now, we know that for children, the risks of any serious illness for COVID is extremely small. And we know we've been seeing, at least from 12-year-olds and upwards, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are associated with these cases of heart inflammation in young people. More and more people are coming down with myocarditis. The British researchers, you know, in the UK, they concluded that vaccinating children would be, they're recommending it. But there's, I'm going through all my notes here. I think one of the things to look at is that the T cell immunity from our innate immune system is always more robust than any immunity from the adaptive immune system, which only becomes triggered, you know, after you're infected or if you're going to be given a vaccine. So based on that, that's sound knowledge. I think every medical researcher will agree with that. And therefore, the children who, even if they're coming down with it, these are just very, very mild, common coronavirus illnesses that we've all had somewhere in our childhood, and just a common cold and cough. A little bit of congestion without any serious, there's no serious implications of that whatsoever, unless the child is very sickly in other ways with other comorbidities. And what we're seeing, at least from the 12 to 19-year-old group in the VAERS database, there's been just a growing number of deaths and 3,600 ER visits and 1,600 hospitalizations, heart inflammation. I'm not sure how, I think there's only 31 deaths currently within the VAERS database for the 12, 19-year-olds, and we know that's an undercount. So,
okay.
There's going to be more, we're going to need more information on for the children.
Okay, but I also studied all the literature, and I do not see any reason to be subjecting children to a COVID vaccine or a booster shot. We're going to talk about the boosters tomorrow. And also, we should have a national program to help young people build their immune system, which is inexpensive, easy to do, and especially if it were given into the school system instead of the vaccine. Thank you, Richard. We're going to go now to a clip, and then you can call in and share your points of view. The clip is from a investigative journalist talking about Big Pharma's control over the FDA and why you cannot just believe the statistics or anything the FDA says because of their long sordid and actual criminal history. They're totally captured by special interest groups, and you're not one of those special interest groups. Let's go to that right now.
Radar. Well, millions of Americans turn to the FDA for assurances that the medications and products they use are safe. Created in the early 20th century, the agency was designed to protect the U.S. consumer from unsafe, ineffective medications, equipment, and contaminated food. The agency has had some real success stories, from blocking a morning sickness drug in the 60s that caused birth defects to regulating the manufacturing of foods and purity of over-the-counter medications. The FDA has many times ensured that high-quality, trustworthy products enter American homes. But an agency that was once fully taxpayer-funded and thus worked only for the American people has now shifted to being largely funded by the very industries it regulates. 45% of the FDA's overall budget now comes from the companies it's reviewing, and 65% of the FDA's budget specifically for human drug regulation comes directly from Big Pharma itself. Now, how can an agency regulate an industry it's being funded by? That's a pretty basic and fair question. This new way to fund the FDA began in the 90s, and through the years, the FDA's reliance on company money has increased. It all started in the 80s when the HIV crisis was creating fear amongst the masses. People were upset that experimental treatments were taking a while to be approved by the FDA. Typical approval for a drug in that time was in the range of 3 to 8 years. And in response to intense pressure, Congress in the early 90s shifted how the FDA was funded in order to encourage speeding up the process. So instead of the agency being fully taxpayer funded, the new setup would have the drug companies themselves footing part of the bill. Now, this would theoretically allow the FDA to expand and hire more people to speed up the regulatory process. And in exchange for pharma money, the FDA would have to set goal dates for drug reviews that were satisfactory to the drug companies. So let's look at the safety record of the drug since this change in funding. Now, the FDA doesn't always get it right. Prior to this shift in funding, the FDA withdrew or issued black box warning labels on about 21% of the previously approved drugs. That's not really a great record, but it gets worse after the change in funding. The FDA now withdraws or retroactively slaps warning labels on over 26% of previously approved drugs. This means that over a quarter of all FDA-approved drugs later, sometimes years later, end up either being taken off the market because they find out, oops, they're actually not so safe, or they discover serious side effects that require a large black box warning to be placed on the packaging. And a quarter is being generous. Researchers at the Yale School of Medicine found that nearly a third of approved drugs between 2001 and 2010 ended up having major safety issues years after the medications were made widely available. Now, this funding shift that lets companies pay the FDA a fee in exchange for speedy reviews isn't the only conflict of interest. The revolving door between the agency and cushy pharma jobs is another area of concern. Researchers found 27% of regulators left the FDA to work in high-paying pharma jobs. This leads us to wonder if the regulators who are looking out for their own careers are going easy on pharma in order to stay in their good graces for later job opportunities. And how they even make contacts to get those jobs is also eyebrow raising. Questions have been raised regarding the mingling of regulators and company representatives at conferences and lunches held in high-end fancy hotels such as the Four Seasons. One such concerning annual conference is put on by the organization IMPACT. The stated goal of the organization is to improve the design of clinical trials. Drug manufacturers pay tens of thousands of dollars to send reps to mingle with FDA officials and NIH researchers at their annual conference. And it seems to have paid off. One clinical trial initiative that sprung from these conferences is called Enriched Enrollment, which allows drug companies to weed out subjects who are non-responsive or who have adverse reactions to the drugs from the clinical trials. This speeds up the approval process and ensures the drug will prove more effective in the data. And speaking of the data, because pharmaceutical companies are paying for the clinical trials, there are many questions regarding the impartiality of the results. Not to mention, the barometer is usually a placebo, not existing effective drugs. So a company only has to prove that their new, expensive, not eligible to be generic treatment is better than nothing. And there's the payments from the pharmaceutical companies to the FDA's physician advisors. Before drugs and treatments are approved, a panel of advisors meet to hear the science, ask questions, and vote whether or not to recommend an approval. The advisors must disclose any possible conflicts of interest. Obviously, this is meant to keep the regulators on the side of the people. But here's the problem. It's well known and widespread that panel members will receive future payments and gifts from the companies they are reviewing or from their major competitors. In fact, a study done by Science found that the 107 physician advisors they looked into, 40 of them had received post hoc earnings or research support to the tune of at least $10,000, 26 of which received more than $100,000, and 6 who received more than $1 million. The report concludes, quote, of the more than $24 million in personal payments or research support from the industry to the 16 top-earning advisors who received more than $300,000 each, 93% came from the makers of drugs those advisors previously reviewed or from competitors, unquote. So, yeah. Maybe these advisors didn't have conflicts of interest before their vote, but knowing the drug companies might make it rain after their vote sure can be persuasive. So in recap, We have a regulatory body that's funded by the very companies they are supposed to be regulating, with about a third of the regulators and advisors either moving on to cushy big pharma careers or receiving lucrative payouts after approving the drugs or halting the drugs of competitors based.
Okay, so that's just another independent report showing you how utterly corrupt the FDA is. And yet we're supposed to believe them, and mainstream media has yet to do a single expose on them. We've done over 40 different exposés on the CDC and the FDA. We're going to take your calls next, 888-874-4888. However, here's what was said by people who watched the Last Call for Tomorrow, a sneak preview. Quote, each one of these is different from a different person. Powerful, mind-blowing, thought-provoking, provides hope for the future if we act now. Our children will be impacted if we don't do something. Gary hit it out of the park again. Great original content. How can this be happening? Why do we not see this on CNN? The human race is finished. We need to come together to fix this. Always love to hear Gary's wisdom. Intriguing, well thought out documentary. Images, content, message, all on point. We each need to do our part to make change. Where do we start? Thank you, Gary, for attempting to save us from ourselves. It will be the younger generation that will have to get us out of this mess. Compassion makes me think. It is disgusting that people still debate if climate change is real or not. Climate change, is this debatable? Fake news never talks about this data. Coming up, go to GaryNall.com. You'll see how you can be a part of the viewership that will watch the most award-winning documentary in history, Last Call for Tomorrow. The problems and the solutions. Then following that, there will be almost 2 hours. I'll be answering questions, sharing thoughts, and I'll have two of the world's leading climatologists on that you have not heard before. That's two. They're already set to appear. That's in about 3.5 weeks from now. So go to GaryNall.com and join me for a live noon, whatever the date is, October 16th? A Saturday at noon to watch on Zoom, Last Call for Tomorrow. And before we take your call, one last quick thing here, and that is we have a special today. And I asked the people in the office, you create the special, give people a really good discount, and they've come up with a really good discount. So we'll share that with you. But first, let me just go to the audience real quick, so at least get them in on this. So let's say hello, and who do we have here? Who's on? James? James, your turn.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, James.
Well, there's your answer. People are not held responsible for their actions because they're looking for the answer in the wrong place due to not building their structure from the bottom up. And being sure they had something powerful that they didn't. And in their confusion or anger, it doesn't work but tantalize, getting played by truly forces of puppetry in this form of bloating. And there's disillusion and core weakness instead of support. So ungroundedness, leaving the perpetrators aloof.
Okay, well said. Thank you, James. J.K. from Manhattan, your turn.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. You spoke at the beginning of the program about the efficacy of juicing and changing attitude towards many conditions. I want to know whether or not that is true for affecting structural damage. I am facing a potential heart transplant because of both pre- and post-COVID damage to my heart. I don't know if there's any way to resolve that non-surgically, so I'm seeking your guidance.
Okay, I would suggest that you email me at prnstudio@gmail.com and put all the details in. I don't have time now, but I'll be happy to look at that and see what I might offer the way of insights. Okay? Put in everything. The more information I have, the better the answer can be. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you. So here's your special for today, and you're getting 47% savings. You're getting the Supremacy that I use, Supremacy Extra, 240 vegan capsules. And this is the Supremacy that gives you 2,241 milligrams of vitamin C per serving. There are 80 servings in this, so it's going to last several months. You're getting your vitamin C from calcium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, selenium, selenate, potassium as ascorbate, cranberries, bilberries, bioflavonoid extract, acerola extract, beet extract, amla extract, all that. So it's the best of the best vitamin C. Then you're getting calcium and magnesium, 120 vegan capsules with 575 milligrams of citrate and of calcium and citrate of magnesium. They're equal, 575 of each. So this is terrific, and it's also has some ascorbyl palmitate in there, but that's calcium and magnesium. And third thing you're getting is a documentary self-empowerment video called Change Your Life Now. And millions of Americans are at a crossroad, faced with doing more of the same but wanting a different outcome. We want to be happier and healthier, more at peace with ourselves. We want joy and love. You deserve it. But now for the hard part. There are these desires and wishes. Are they compatible with our actions? How can we make a choice that works against being healthy, against sharing love, against being empathetic to other people, against being in service for humanity? So how do we reconcile? How do we fill an empty life? A life that is just a perpetuation of one day to the next, just Groundhog Day, one ritual after another. Understand what your life could be and who you really are. In almost everything you do every day, it's based upon your beliefs. Have you challenged your beliefs? Which are good, which are not? These are just some of the issues I take on in this very important self-empowerment documentary, Change Your Life Now. So you're getting Change Your Life Now, the calcium and magnesium vegan capsules, and the Supremacy Extra, 240 vegan capsules, high potency, and that's the special. And you're saving on this a lot of money. You're saving $69.99. You're saving $70, and you're only paying $78.99. So you're saving 47% on this. So how do you get it? Well, you just call in and order it. And you can call our number, Neil at the Vitamin Closet, 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430. Or you can speak with our Sandy and Diane at 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. It's a great special and two products that we absolutely need, and then motivation, we really above and beyond that. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.